That would be the ever efficient Brandy. So thank you very much, folks, to the meeting. The first thing we'll do, obviously, is ask Brandy to take roll for us. Brandy?
Yes, thank you. Judge Conklin?
I'm present, thank you.
Ms. Fleming?
Present.
Judge Getty? Judge Fannin?
Present.
Judge Gabe?
Present.
Judge Kelly? Going to be late. We'll keep that open. Judge Larsh is absent today. Judge Merrifield?
Just sent an email that she's tied up in a hearing. She'll try to join us when she can.
Thank you. Judge Reinhart? Judge Sachs?
Here.
Judge Siebert? Ms. Cameron?
Present.
Mr. Finke?
Here.
Mr. Kim? Mr. Landry?
Here.
Ms. Levere?
Here.
Mr. Riley?
Here.
Mr. Rule?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
And Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes, good afternoon, present.
Thank you. Advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
Good afternoon, yes.
Mr. Theodorovich?
Hello, yes, I'm here.
And our liaison member, Judge Callum Carrion?
Right here.
Currently, Judge Conklin, 13 members present, 8 absent.
That's a quorum.
Yes.
All right, and some may, given the hour of the day, I imagine some may be finishing up a calendar, so we'll get started on our discussion. Before we do that, some routine yet important matters. The first would be to approve the minutes of our May 8th kickback meeting. It's at page 3 of your materials. Is there a motion to approve?
Judge Sachs will move.
Thank you, Judge. Second?
Riley will second.
Thank you. Moved and seconded that the minutes of the May 4th meeting be approved, as is our standard practice. I'll call for any opposition to that motion. Any opposition to the motion to approve the minutes? And hearing none, the minutes are approved. Brandy, any public comment come in for us?
No.
Okay, we have no public comment, so let's get to the single issue at hand. We have an hour and a half set aside for this, so I want to take the time necessary, and the other hand, recognizing everybody's long day, also try to be efficient with your time. So this is, and you're all familiar with this, this is the discussion of the civil assessment backfill funding allocation methodology. I'm going to give a brief introduction and then turn to Rose and then ask Chad as well to sort of bring in a perspective for us of these recommendations. The recommendation itself that was passed through FMS is set forth at your materials. The actual recommendation is at page 11 of your materials, but let's talk about exactly how we got there and where we're going today. This is to consider, as I said, the methodology for allocating the 2023-2024 civil assessment backfill funding. We first considered this, I think you all remembered our last meeting, and then there were concerns and perceptions about issues that I think will also impact our discussion today, those of equity, those of stability or volatility, the other side of stability, and how we treat this. Do we treat it as new money or do we not treat it as new money? It was broken out from that meeting and sent back to FMS for a real deep dive down into the weeds. And I'll start off by, as we always do sometimes at the end, thanking staff for all their hard work on this, gathering a lot of information. I want to thank everybody on TICBAC, on FMS. There's been a lot of very appropriate comments and input and observations made about this issue. You know, in the grand scheme of things, this is a sliver of the funding pie, but that sliver is important. And so I don't mean to downplay it by saying it's something we shouldn't pay attention to. And it has obviously got a lot of attention. On the other hand, I don't think we can overlook the significant funding, especially the CPI funding that's come to us that has put us in a beneficial position, I guess would be the best way to put it. So the materials have been approved today. They set forth the 4 scenarios that were considered by FMS. I think before I speak any further, I'll just let Rose present on those scenarios. I'll summarize for you what's before us today, and we'll move forward. Rose?
Great. Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rose Lane, and I'm a senior analyst with Budget Services. The item on today's agenda is to consider a recommendation from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, or FMS, for the civil assessment backfill funding for 23-24 and ongoing. In total, the civil assessment backfill has decreased by $12.5 million. This includes an ongoing $10 million decrease to the allocation beginning in 23-24, and an additional $2.5 million approved by the Judicial Council to fully fund Santa Clara Superior Court's annual debt service obligation. So to provide a little background, the original $110 million civil assessment backfill allocation methodology for 22-23 was reduced by the $48.3 million maintenance of effort. It was reduced further to fund the remaining civil assessment obligations, and the remainder was allocated via the workload formula methodology as outlined on page 7 of your materials. Initially, the workload formula methodology was also applied to the 23-24 civil assessment backfill funding amount and is identified as scenario 1 on page 9 of your materials. The summary in attachment A highlights allocation amounts for the civil assessment backfill funding and updated workload formula percentages for each of the scenarios considered by FMS. So after reviewing and discussing additional scenarios, FMS voted to approve a civil assessment backfill methodology that would treat the $12.5 million as a reduction from 22-23 and allocates this reduction proportionally based on the court's percentage of 22-23 civil assessment funding. This methodology is scenario 4 and can be found on page 10 of your materials. Scenario 2 treats 23-24 as a reduction in base funding from 22-23 and allocates the $12.5 million reduction in civil assessment backfill funding via the workload formula methodology. Overall, this scenario would reduce the allocations already made in 22-23 via the workload formula. Scenario 3 allocates the civil assessment backfill amount on a proportional basis based on the 23-24 workload formula allocations as approved by the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. Lastly, a supplemental scenario was added to today's materials. That is a variation of Scenario 4, which takes into account concerns raised by FMS members regarding courts over 100% and courts below the statewide average funding level as a result of the civil assessment backfill funding. The supplemental scenario outlined in Attachment C and also detailed in Attachment D increases the amount of the $12.5 million reduction for three courts in the amount of $421,000 and decreases the reduction amount for five courts below the statewide average funding level. The recommendation presented to the committee on page 11 of your materials is to consider scenario 4 as recommended by the FMS, which again, to be clear, is an ongoing $12.5 million reduction in civil assessment backfill funding that is proportionally based on the court's percentage of 22-23 civil assessment backfill funding, which would be effective July 1, 2023. The final recommendation from today's meeting will then go to the Judicial Branch Budget Committee for consideration. That concludes our presentation, and we now turn the item back over to Judge Conklin.
Rose, thanks so much. So before I open up the discussion generally, just a couple comments. I want to clarify, as Rose did as well, but Scenario 5 was something that Chad and I discussed after the FMS meeting, to ask Budget Services to compile, considering the concern of the members at the FMS meeting about the 100% issue. So all our FMS members, I think they're at that meeting or on this meeting now, they can clearly state any opinions or concerns they had. We to frame the issue, a couple things. We're not going to be able to crack the nut of the over 100% funding today. That's something, however, we are dedicated to and will have on the FMS and TICPAC work plan as we move forward. Because as you'll note in footnote 4 of your report, part of this court's going over 100% has to do with the influx of funding because of the CPI funding. So that is very good news to us, but helps us also to confront that issue about how we're going to bring those courts back within the range at another day. So at FMS, as I think I said a few moments ago, between these four scenarios, we were trying to balance concerns about equity, because you can all check the charts, I'm sure you have, and you'll see that some of these scenarios take some courts now down below the 90% funding level, as well as some over 100%. At the same time, trying to address those issues that I think brought this to the forefront, and those were ones of stability and predictability, recognizing there were some pretty wide swings in scenario number one. And then finally, how do we treat this? Do we treat it as new money or not? Scenario number one generally did that. So there were two votes taken at FMS. The first scenario, the motion was to approve scenario number two. After a detailed discussion, that motion did not pass on a 4-5 vote. And then we swung to scenario number four. And after additional discussion, that passed on to you as a 5-4 vote. So that's where we are today. As I've often said, I don't pretend to be anywhere near an expert on this. And I many times have acknowledged the expertise and experience of CEOs, especially on these intricate issues. And so I'm going to turn to Chad first and ask Chad. He's done a lot of work talking to CEOs. I know David wants to make a comment too. I'm just trying to remember folks who said, and then I'll watch for hands being raised. So Chad.
Yeah, thanks, Judge. I mean, as all the members of this committee know, when we had the original recommendation that came before us at our last meeting, the big concern that was discussed was the volatility or the lack of stability. And I think a lot of folks were surprised to see some of the large number swings and the big changes from the allocation last year. So then as folks started talking, you know, the issue was sent back to FMS. And as folks started talking, I think it became clear that, well, part of the reason why that volatility was there was because the original recommendation did treat this as new money. So instead of saying, okay, we got 110 million last year, that's dropping to 10 million this year, how do we deal with that reduction? Instead, it was, okay, we're getting 100 million this year, let's run that through consistent with what we did last year. And so I think you hit on it, Judge, which is there is sort of two different ways of looking at this. There's looking at it as new money, and then if that's scenarios one and three, and if we do that, okay, there's a different, if we're going to treat it as new money, then there's different ways to allocate it. Or there's looking at it as, you know, this is TCTF money that was allocated last year, it's been reduced this year, we're just going to deal with that reduction. And how are we going to deal with that reduction? And that's what 2-4 and now 4-5, whatever we're calling it, that's what that does. And so with each of them, then once you sort of get over that issue of how are we going to philosophically think about this money, then it's, okay, well, once we get over that, how are we then going to allocate it? Is it going to be in some pro rata fashion? Is it going to be via the workload formula? And so, and then swirling around all that, as you've said, Judge, is there are concerns about equity and recognizing where everyone is relative to one another, and then the concerns about stability and our sort of longstanding thoughts about people getting pushed over 100. So it's an intricate tapestry of an issue, I think we have, and you are correct. It was a very good and very spirited discussion at FMS.
intricate tapestry of an issue. I think that's the quote of the day, and it very accurately describes what happened at FMS. So thank you, Chad. David, you had been in touch with me as well, indicating that you had a perspective or a comment you wanted to share.
Yeah, if I may, thank you very much. And clearly, this is a very complicated issue because of the commitment I think that we've made as a branch to help boost the average of funding for everybody, and we've made a lot of headway. As being a participant in the early stages of creating a funding methodology, one of the sensitivities that I had and continue to recognize is trying to minimize the volatility of funding. And that was principally the reason when this issue was brought up at TICBAC originally, when we were looking at scenario number one. I was one of the folks that encouraged us to re-examine this because it was not intended to generate the volatility that that we saw at that point. Going forward into the FMS meeting, as we took a look at the different scenarios a little bit closer, the scenario that was ultimately passed was the result was that folks would be moving down from where they were for this current budget year as a result of the new formula that was brought forward. And as a result, I voted in opposition because we were moving courts below 90%. And I thought that it was important for us to move forward using the same methodology that we use this year to some degree, maybe not entirely, in order to maintain some level of equity, an equity commitment. And that was largely because I was considering this to be new money, but in retrospect, I think the decision that it not be recognized as new money seemed very reasonable. And but still yet, the recommendation that was presented was not something that even today I am 100% in support of. And the reason is, back in 2020, when the branch was seeing a reduction in our budget, there was a methodology that was created to apply reductions across the board. And in that regard, there was consideration of the statewide average. There was a band that was created, 2% above the statewide average and 2% below the statewide average. And within that, there was the conclusion that those above the statewide average would receive a reduction that was greater than those below the statewide average. And since we're talking about a reduction here, it seems reasonable for us to look to that formula that was created to apply a reduction, because that's exactly what we're dealing with right now. So as to minimize the impact on those courts that would end up falling below the 90% funding level. And this is one of the issues that I had brought forward to Judge Conklin to see if there's a possibility of maybe demonstrating what the numbers actually pencil out to. But of course, we just didn't have enough time to do that. But I think conceptually, that may be something for consideration if this body decides to examine it a little bit closer. Again, I can accept the fact that it's not new money, so we should not deploy the 50-50 split, but we do have some history in how do we deal with reductions that impact the branch. And I think if we can strike a balance between applying the reduction using a similar formula, but also maybe not in its entirety, eliminating a reduction to those courts below the statewide average, but rather maybe targeting maybe 90% as a goal, maybe we can land at a place that may be a little more workable without creating the swings in funding level that would otherwise be produced in looking at scenario, I think number five is what was mentioned. So my introduction was going to be to, you know, see if there's a consideration to look at how we applied cuts to the courts back in 2020 when we were looking at no new money and we had to figure out a formula to apply a reduction in a manner that, you know, recognizes the headway that we've made with reaching the statewide average or getting us closer to the statewide average and trying to preserve that. So I'll stop there and chime in later if there are any questions.
I appreciate that. And obviously other input would be, but, and Chris has his hand up. Chris, we'll move to you. But then David, I want to come back to you to see if maybe you have a specific proposal or thought of either four or five and how we would use your thought of the governor, not our governor, but the limitation of the reduction or increase. But Chris, you had your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Judge. And really, I think it's just a process question. Based on the comments so far, I'm getting the impression that it's not really on the table for us at today's meeting to consider the possibility of recommending scenario five or the supplemental scenario. But your comments just now suggested maybe it is. So I guess I'd like to clarify that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, procedurally what happened, it was a little unusual, but I remind you, kickback can do essentially anything it wants. It has a recommendation from the FMS subcommittee, but like the analogy would be, we'll send a recommendation ultimately to JBBC. They can decide to do something different. So the only reason we came forth with scenario five was pure timing. And that trying to address the FMS members' concerns at our very recent meeting about, can we do anything to address those courts that are pretty substantially above 100% to perhaps bring them back down a little bit and use that to bring those courts that are below the 90% up. And scenario number five touches that, candidly. It doesn't move the needle a lot, but it does move the needle a little bit. So unless a member feels strongly, I think scenario five is open for consideration as well.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. So thoughts, I want to try to obviously focus us and move us, but not also prevent anybody from making any motion. Scenario number one was one that caught a lot of attention, but one that I think also recognized, as I think David and Chad have said, that just had some inherent problems that I think make it rather difficult to utilize that scenario to move forward. Now, candidly, I was one of the individuals who at the FMS meeting was and still maintain concerns about equity. And we've made such significant strides, and be it scenario four or five or any other scenario, that the perception is it moves us off that equity achievement is something I think we need to consider. On the other hand, I don't think we can ignore the fact that a lot of that movement is not really brought about by this, but is brought about by somewhat of the civil assessment, of the CPI increase to us. That's how some of these courts appear to be overfunded. Well, I'm sure they would not agree that they are. So not to prevent anybody from making a motion or suggestion, but to focus us perhaps on four and five, Judge Getty, you had your hand up.
I had the opportunity this morning to listen to the tape. As you know, I was not able to attend the subcommittee meeting, and I appreciate Judge Conklin, you sharing my email with the subcommittee. You know, one of my concerns has been, and I've talked about this a lot, that we've not achieved equity yet amongst our courts, and I think this is a really good picture of where we still have work to do. I appreciated David Yamasaki's suggestion of trying to find some methodology where folks could all get to 92%. Like many folks, I went into law to get away from math, so I trust Zlatko with the numbers and Rose. But I don't know that it has to be an all or nothing is one other thing I would throw out there. One of the problems is that we caught some folks by surprise. And I think our last set of budget, we were responding, and I wasn't on the committee at that point, so I want to speak for all of you folks. But we were responding to a major change in how we do business. And but we used words like backfill and baseline, and that created an expectation that people built budgets based on a certain set of numbers. And they were able to wrap their heads around, you know, reductions. But when 85% of your operational cost is your staff, there's really not a lot of flexibility. And to have a $6 million or $3 million or $1 million swing in 1 year, historically, you've always had percentage limits on how much that change could be. I was interested, Flacco, you talked about banding during the subcommittee meeting. Maybe you could explain that a little bit to all of us.
Yeah, and thank you, Judge Getty. That was in a situation in which we had 2 years of no new money, and then there was a redistribution of funding from courts above 100% to those below. And so that's not this scenario. That scenario is in which we aren't getting new money. But the concept of bands is that there's a sort of a plus minus around a number that makes that people feel comfortable about as far as you know, what's reasonably in terms seen as equitable. And then also the reductions were also limited so that there weren't significant takedowns. But again, those were in instances where we had two, not necessarily consecutive, but 2 years where there was no new money. That's what that was.
And we did have a discussion at FMS about whether this would be year one of no new money, but it's clearly not year two. Just to close that loop. So that you're right, the banding came up, but if we follow that, as Lacko stated, that procedure, this would not be a second year of no new money. Brandon, you had your hand up for a comment?
I did. I was, my point, and my stance on this is that I do believe it should be treated as new money. However, I wanted to ask Flacco, in the original negotiation for the civil assessment backfill, how was it represented to Department of Finance and the legislature of how these what these funds were for? Because I my understanding is that they were for the reduction in fines and fees that courts weren't able to collect on. And so I would expect that every court that was collecting the civil assessments would get part of the allocation.
Thank you for the question, Brandon. So legislative effort to eliminate civil assessments, we have been very consistent about our position that if any fines or fees are reduced, that we are provided a backfill. And so in the negotiations about elimination or revisions to the civil assessments, there would be that funding provided to us. And so the 110, and knowingly that it was going to be reduced to 100 going forward, it was a commitment of an ongoing amount of revenue backfill. The 10 million, the reason that there was a 10 million amount on top of what is the ongoing 100 was a recognition of that there was a forgiveness of prior debt. So the legislature said, well, there's a value to that that we might have been collecting. And so they gave us effectively a one-time $10 million increase on that base $100 million ongoing amount for the civil assessment backfill. And so now that policy is passed, the trailer bills have happened, the funding is now being deposited as relates to any civil assessments into the general fund. And we now have a trial court trust fund ongoing revenue backfill that was 100 with a one-time $10 million that's ongoing. But nothing in terms of any other sort of commitments. The funding then was ultimately up to the council to make the allocation through the committee process. There were, and that's where we landed in terms of what was the workload formula for the balance of the backfill. Just was no comment on what was the next year. And I think that's why the question is before you now.
Judge Fannin?
So I don't really, I didn't really get the difference or the importance of whether it's new money or not. And I think my position would be result oriented in that I would want it to be whichever one is going to prevent or reduce the problem going forward. I hate to see us go backwards too, like what David was saying. If there was a way we could do a backstop at 90 or something, but it doesn't seem likely given the numbers. But I definitely prefer the supplemental scenario 4 because it minimizes the gaps that are being created. But
just kind of from a technical standpoint,
yeah,
new money as it's been viewed is something that puts goes to the workload formula, and so that's what how the last year's money was treated. I think again, as Chad has described, the new discussion is now this second year of the backfill to be considered new money, or is it to be just a marginal change from the 110 down to the 100, and then adding in the Santa Clara adjustments?
So David, you had hand, and then Chad.
And could I, this is Chad Siebert. I don't know how to raise my hand. I need somebody to teach me how to do it. I try to look it up online. So when they're done, I pretend I raised my hand, please.
Yeah, just wave loud. That's perfect. I'll keep an eye on you. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
All right, David, and then Chad, and then Judge Siebert.
Yeah, thank you very much, Judge. One of the things that I hope everybody recognizes is one of the ways that we've been able to make progress is that when we got new money, and I'm not talking about the inflationary adjustment, but just a general trial court funding increase and appropriation, that would put into motion the distribution formula. 50% goes to those courts below the average and 50% goes through the normal distribution. And the fact that we're recognizing the civil assessment money as not new money and it's not intended to be distributed using that approach, and the fact that we're just reducing the amount that it was reduced by and applying it against the different courts, and coupled with the fact that we are receiving a CPI or a inflationary adjustment to all courts that everybody gets, what ends up happening is that when workload increases to a particular court, there is technically no new money to supply to that court because you have this inflationary adjustment that goes in, and there's no recognition that we're trying to preserve a placement on the towards the statewide average. So that gap is going to continue to grow as the court's workload climbs. You're going to see, and I think that's the same thing that happened in Orange. We are below 90%, partially because of the way that we're going to be looking at the civil assessment money, but also because of workload. And today it's Orange. Tomorrow it's going to be another court that is going to be experiencing growth. And we're essentially going to slide back to this gap between the statewide average and those courts that start seeing, you know, growth. And we're going to go back to where we were, in my view. Now, we obviously haven't made a decision today, but I want to make sure, unless we redistribute those at the upper end, over 100% or somewhere on the upper end, those courts who see see workload increases of significance, their funding level will go down as it relates to what their workload and funding happen to be. So I just want to make sure that there's acknowledgement or an understanding that that's what's going to happen. The gap is going to grow further as workload comes up, unless we either redistribute or we see new money coming into the branch. And I'm hoping that, and that's one of the primary reasons that I was so, I guess, insistent that we recognize and the necessity of preserving this backstop that I'm suggesting. And during the FMS committee meeting, I suggested 92. That may be too high, but it's perhaps a number to serve as a backstop a little bit lower might mitigate the impact, but also maintain this commitment that I think that we're trying to have to preserve funding levels at or towards the statewide average.
All right, thanks. So we'll go to Chad and then Judge Siebert, and then I think Neil had his hand up. But before I do that, just, and David, your comment also goes the other way. So the other thing we, and I think this exemplifies that the FMS has some work to do, and that's a broader task for another day, folks. And that's to talk about, because as a court's workload goes down and its funding stays the same, then it appears to be overfunded. So we're going to have to really be careful to address both of those scenarios, but that's something that FMS is going to have to drill down further into and to bring back to tick back. So we'll go to Chad and then Judge Siebert and then Neil. And I saw another
Sean.
And Sean. All right, let's try to keep that order up, Chad.
Thanks, Judge. So just to sort of respond to Judge Fannin's question, I think, you know, the big difference is what are we doing today? And that is, are we allocating 46.8 million or are we allocating a reduction of 12.5 million, right? That's kind of the difference between 1 and 3 and 2 and 4. Like, what are we doing? And I think a question I have or a concern I have is if we treat this as new money, and we say, okay, we're allocating the 46.8 million. Are we locking ourselves into doing that again next year? And if not, why not, right? Because I mean, to me, this is the same 100 million we got last year. And as Zlatko just articulated, last year was 100 million with a $10 million bump, recognizing the uncollectible money. So if we're going to treat it as new money this year and allocate it as 46.8 million through the workload formula or whatever, why wouldn't we do that again next year? And then that seems like then we're kind of getting away from the fundamental principles of the workload model, right? Because it's really not new money, but we're treating it that way. So that's sort of the cognitive dissonance I'm having.
I think that's a good point. Judge Siebert, and then Neil, and then Sean.
So what we've heard today from Chad and David and so forth is very similar to the kinds of conversations we had at the subcommittee meeting. And there was a lot of discussion about the Chad's point is if and making the distinction between new money and old money. And I didn't 100% get it then, and I don't 100% get it now. And maybe I'm just being too simplistic about it. But first of all, I appreciate the fact that we're part of a group who's trying to be fair to all 58 counties. I mean, in normal life, when you have people dividing up a pie, somebody's trying to get more, somebody's trying to get, you know, everybody's trying to get their biggest slice they can. And I appreciate that we're not doing that. At the same time, I also appreciate the concept of let's try to get people closer to equal and close this equity gap. And so at the meeting we heard, the last meeting, and then now here today, we're hearing a lot about trying to balance equity and volatility, which I 100% get that concept. And I just simply end up back where I ended up the other day when we had the subcommittee meeting, which is, I just can't get my head around, no matter how you justify it, making the equity gap worse when we spent so much energy trying to get it closed. And so maybe it's oversimplistic, but To address Chad's point, I think we should always look at trying to make that as equitable as possible. And I don't know that there needs to be a whole lot of additional justification for it. And maybe that's, again, oversimplistic, but I agree with what Judge Fannin was saying, is that we just, anything that makes the equity gap worse just doesn't sit right with me after all the effort that's been made to do otherwise. And so I guess for me, I'm not spending that much energy trying to justify it on any basis other than we're trying to close that gap. So that's kind of where I come out on it, but I don't know if that helps. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sean. And no, I'm sorry, Neil, and then Sean. Neil?
I'll be quick. Actually, this has been a difficult one for me because I can't, it's hard for me to make sense of it other than the fact that for San Mateo, for example, you know, we were generally, our court has been a little bit above the statewide average to all of a sudden we're below the statewide average. And I think it's all based on a change in workload somehow over the last year. But, you know, I couldn't understand how our allocation would have gone from 550 to a big increase up to $3.6 million. So the only way I can understand this is that, and I agree with Chad, that it was more like allocating the reduction as we reallocated the money for the debt service for people at debt service under civil assessment. That's more understandable to everybody than trying to use the new money methodology to allocate this under the workload.
All right. Thanks, Neil. Sean, I think that gets us to you.
Yeah, and I agree with that comment, Neil. And let me also say, I don't see this as new money. This money has already been allocated. We've established a baseline for it. This is really a reduction. And the way we've dealt with reductions in the past is similar to a scenario 4, where you prorata that out based on your new baseline. So we already have a baseline for civil assessments. Everyone received it last fiscal year. And we should then allocate the reduction of $12.5 million among those courts. And I think scenario 4 best does that. Scenario 1 to me is the least predictable. The swings are too great. It's too unpredictable. It violates the principles that I think this committee established. And it's too hard for courts to predict that year to year. So I would be in favor of scenario 4 as recommended, or some variant of it. But I do not see this as new money.
All right. Krista, I just saw your hand pop up.
Yeah, thanks, Judge. I agree with Chad and Sean, you know, as I mentioned at the FMS meeting. And I just want to clarify, you know, in my mind, this does not, we're not stepping away from our core principle of workload equity. The vast majority of our funding is still allocated and adjusted based on shifts in workload. And Zlatko, I don't know if maybe you could talk just for a minute about what methodology exists today to adjust workload, or excuse me, to adjust funding based on shifts in workload, absent new funding. That may be helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Krista. It's that process when there's the definition of no new money, then there are internal adjustments. But otherwise, the way in which workload funding is just as when we get new money. Those are the two scenarios.
Judge Conklin?
Judge Kamakarian, yes?
Yeah, I apologize. I have not been able to figure out how to raise my hand. So that's why I interrupted and I apologize. Am I able to make a brief comment?
Yeah, as soon as, Krista, were you done or were you?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So it's okay. I'm going to make sure, Krista, we close the Krista's Zlatko loop.
Two ways to deal with workload adjustments is, one is when new money comes, and we look at where people are that year based on their workload, then we make the 50-50 adjustment. And again, as to Neil's point, every year you're going to change based on the filings, updated filings, which is the core driver. And then in years when we have the 2 years of no money, then we do the internal redistribution per the sort of agreed upon council approach that reflects those bands.
Does that answer your question, Krista? Judge Calmacarian, you wanted to add something?
Just very briefly, if people are trying to decide whether this is new money or not, think about this hypothetical. Let's say the number hadn't changed and there was no reduction. Would we call that whole amount again new money? I don't think so. So just because there's a reduction doesn't mean that we should treat the reduced amount as all new money, when we wouldn't call it new money if there was no reduction at all. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Good comment. So I'm looking for other hands. And Judge Gatti, I'm glad we're circling back to you, because I felt like I kind of cut you off earlier. Did you have something else you wanted to bring in? You're muted. You're still muted.
The other questions, I think, got there. And one of the things that you did, Judge Conklin, well, is you started off our meeting by saying, remember, this is a smaller percentage of a greater whole. And so we're not necessarily seeing what each dollar sign represents of an entire budget or the change that it represents to the entire budget. But I was hoping that maybe Zlatko could walk us through the supplemental scenario, if that's something that's before this committee.
I think it's shorter, basically. Yeah, go ahead, Brandy. Yeah, please.
Brandy, I didn't mean to pick on you.
No worries.
So the supplemental scenario, or scenario 5, is a play, for lack of a better term, on scenario 4. So it keeps the same principle of treating it as a reduction of $12.5 million, as opposed to treating it as new money. But it also takes into consideration the concerns about courts over 100% and courts falling below the statewide average, or falling the lowest funded courts. So what it does is it increases the reduction for courts that are higher up and decreases the reduction for courts that are lower. So the higher courts aren't going too high and the lower courts aren't going too low. Does that help explain it?
So it somehow brings in David's concern, yet without the bans. I'm sorry, Judge Gatti, go ahead.
Right. So if you're looking at the supplemental scenario without that secondary adjustment, and I'm not going to pick on San Mateo, but San Mateo is an example. They would go from 86.5 under scenario 4 to 87.4. Is that a correct reading of that?
Yes.
Schematic?
Yes.
Okay.
So it does bring those lower courts up a smidge, and it brings those higher courts down a smidge, though a smidge, which is what we are trying to do. This is, again, I think everybody is now appreciating the struggles we had at FMS. And again, I know I'm repeating myself, but regardless of the outcome of this, FMS has some work to do to start to from a broader recommendation, talk about those things. But
is it premature, Judge Conklin, for me to move the supplemental scenario? Because that was pretty much exactly what I wrote in my email, which was scenario 4, but no court greater than 100%. Is that not before the committee at this point?
Well, it's not only not premature, but I was just about to say, does anybody have a motion on any scenario? And scenario number 5 is, I've deemed as the chair, it's on the table. So it is a scenario that we can consider. I think everybody, I haven't heard any strong pushback from that. So are you making a motion?
So moved.
Scenario number 5.
I would move. Are we calling it scenario 5 instead of the supplemental? I'll call it scenario 5. I would move that we adopt scenario 5. Which treats the funding with a proportionate reduction, but ensures that no court receives greater than 100%, and allocates the adjustment to the lowest funded courts.
Is there a second to that?
Judge Gable second. I think it's the fairest.
Moved and seconded for cert number five. So now that focuses our discussion. Not we can't discuss any other, but that now we have a motion on the table for scenario number five. Krista, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I just have a quick question for Brandy or someone. When you look at the percentage differences, all of the courts that were below 100, it looks like except one show a 21.1% reduction, and then orange shows a 17.6% reduction. I'm just wondering how that, what the explanation is for that. I just don't understand. I'm sorry.
So in scenario four, everyone's getting they're getting that proportional decrease all the same. When we go to, is that the 21%, or you're looking at scenario five, correct?
I'm looking at scenario five on attachment D.
So the reason that orange is taking less of a decrease is because where they are relative to the statewide funding level, because of orange's workload increase, they've fallen down the scale. So what we're saying, we're recognizing, okay, Orange and San Mateo, you've fallen down the scale, so we're going to reduce you less in order for you to hold on to a little more capital for your business operation.
Does that answer your question, Krista?
It does, but just one quick follow-up. So that's the only court in that position?
No, there were five courts total. Give me just a moment.
Are those the ones listed in the material?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
See if I can't find it. Sure.
I think it's Nevada, Napa, Orange, San Mateo, and one other.
Neil, thanks.
Sutter. And then you'll notice as well, Krista, that like Alameda, their difference is a negative 53.2%. Mendocino, negative 100%. They're getting bigger reductions in order for those lower funded courts to have some more money. Okay,
so scenario five has been moved and seconded. I'm just trying to keep us on time, but not stifle any further discussion. Any further discussion before I'm going to do an unusual, usually I'm any knows, but I'm going to do the same thing we did at FMS. I'm just going to ask Brandy or whoever or Rose to take a roll vote, but any further discussion?
This is Judge Siebert. Sorry again about not knowing how to raise my hand, but I'll get somebody to help me know that so I don't keep saying it. I'm looking at the supplemental, what we're calling scenario five, and I thought I heard somebody say that nobody goes above 100. And I'm not sure where that's coming from. I'm looking at it. I don't know which column heading it is that tells us in the end on this scenario, what percentage people come to.
I think they are above
which 100. Column.
There are still quite a few above 100. You're right.
Okay. That's what I thought. And there are some that are below 90, right?
Yeah. It just tightens it. Much of that 100% has to do with workload issues that we'll address through FMS.
Yeah, I understand. I would just say this, again, David picked an arbitrary number. I think, I don't know how arbitrary it was. It was a number he picked that just as an example in our last meeting where he said, I think 92% should be the goal. And nobody falls below 92%. And it could be 90. It could be any different number. But that's my problem with this scenario is that we have people that are dropping below 90%. We still have people that are considerably above 100%. And it just strikes me as, we tweaked it from four, it doesn't really, in my view, put as much emphasis on the equity as I think that it needs to, notwithstanding all the arguments that I've heard otherwise today. So that's where I'm at. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Additional comments? I'm sorry.
I want to make a comment. I just want to let you know that I am here. It's Judge Kelly.
Great. Judge Kelly, thanks for joining us. Hope you're hearing.
Yes, I've been here. So I didn't want to interrupt.
Great. So we're on the precipice of the right, maybe I should say it more positively. We're about to take a vote on scenario number five. I'm just making sure there's no additional comments. All right, and I've heard none. So, and I want to, because Judge Siebert, you're not alone. I'm trying to watch for people that are waving.
Wait, I have a question. This is Judge Fannin.
Judge Fannin, go ahead.
Yes. So, if we didn't approve this, then what?
Well, we would keep our discussion going today to see if we have something to approve. And then I would report to JBBC what our outcome was.
But I mean, if no scenario, could there be a circumstance where no scenario is approved?
Sure.
We say, go back to the drawing board and come up with a.
No, you know, no, that we would have to kick at the JBBC. The timing is so tight.
I see. Okay.
JBBC would have to punt, essentially.
All right.
Anybody else?
This is Chad. I just wanted to, just to Judge Siebert's point, and why scenario five still has a number of people over 100. I mean, I think a lot of that's from the CPI, right? So the goal with scenario five was to not allow the civil assessment money to take anybody over 100%, right? But not to deal more broadly with, we know, I mean, so long as we're in this world of indexed funding each year, which I personally think is a great world to be in, we're going to have people over 100. So,
and I see John Wardlow, see John Wardlaw here, and John's going to be coming to us in the near future with significant points and perspectives about our methodology. John is very in tune with this, and I think has some very significant things he's already shared with us, but will continue to share with us, which is why I keep referring back to the work that's going to percolate up from FMS to this to address much broader issues. John, I think you know that's to come, right?
Yes, Judge. Looking forward to the conversation.
Okay.
So this is Judge Siebert again. This will be my last point, I promise. To responding to Chad, I think that's a great explanation. I appreciate that. Does the same analysis work on the downside? In other words, I understand why some are still over 100, but does that really explain why we have people that are dropping below 90%? I don't think it does, but if it does, then I'd like to hear that, because that's where I'm troubled by. I'm troubled less by the people that are over 100% as I am by increasing the lack of equity, if you would call it, gap that we've worked so hard to try to close. So that's my last comment. Thanks.
It's about the workload, Judge. The workload changes year to year based on the three-year rolling average, as Neil has discussed. And so we could be sitting here next year and courts that were on one side of the funding average could be on the other side of the funding average. And one thing I will say is that with this budget, the overall statewide average is going up because we're getting more money too. So there are increases to courts. It's just on this particular issue, it was presented in one way, and now people are seeing percentages, not because there's less money, but rather there's more money, but the workload between the courts is different. That's a fundamental part of the workload formula.
That accounts for a big piece of it. David, did I see your hand before I call for a vote?
Well, no, I was only going to try to explain to Judge Siebert why there's the distinction. Why, I mean, the idea that courts over 100% would not be receiving any of the civil assessment money. And on the other side, one of the reasons why you're seeing courts below 90 is that the money in play is $12.5 million. In order to bring some courts to 90, or everybody to 90, that money has to come from somewhere,
right?
Because $12.5 million is not going to take the courts there. It would require some sort of distribution of just the general allocations that are being made. So that's the reason for why it doesn't touch those courts by bringing them, you know, pushing them forward.
Okay. Any other comments or questions or concerns? Hands waving, don't see it. All right, Brandy, I'm not sure who's the appropriate person to take a roll call vote, but I would ask for that.
Absolutely. So we are voting on the scenario five option. Judge Conklin.
Yes.
Ms. Fleming?
Yes.
Judge Getty?
Yes.
Judge Fannin?
Yes.
Judge Gabe?
Yes.
Judge Kelly?
Yes.
Judge Sachs?
Yes.
Ms. Cameron?
Yes.
Mr. Finke?
Yes.
Mr. Landry?
Yes.
Ms. Levere?
Yes.
Mr. Riley? Mr. Riley?
Brandon, you might be muted.
That was a quiet yes.
Thank you. Mr. Rule?
Yes.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Yes.
Mr. Yamasaki?
No.
Is there anyone's name I did not call?
You didn't call Judge Siebert, I don't think.
Yeah,
thank you. Sorry, Judge. Quite a few absences I was working around. Judge Siebert,
yeah, sorry. I would like to vote. I would like to vote yes, and I apologize for being late. I was doing a murder sentencing, so it took me a little longer. Thank you.
All right. Is there anybody, any individual member that has not voted? All right. So I am. Will take scenario number 5 now to JBBC. I will do my best to encapsulate this discussion, the discussion from FMS, the challenges that we all tried to balance. And again, I think I've said it 4 times, but I assure you, because I co-chair FMS with Chad, there's more work to do, and that's what we're going to be doing. So I appreciate that. I think Judge Siebert had a very appropriate comment, and I too want to emphasize that. Nobody here is trying to grab a bigger piece of the pie. And some people here have voted on a scenario that cuts their court. And I think it just speaks so highly to the thought that goes into all these discussions. I want to just pivot for a minute, unless anybody wants to add anything. There's always changes to committees, and we're about to confront one. And I hope she doesn't mind me acknowledging this. It's now been made public, but Brandy is going to be opting out of government service to take another opportunity. And I've been on this committee long enough to remember Lucy. I don't know if many of you remember Lucy Fogarty, and I thought because Brandy came in shortly before Lucy, and Lucy sort of, along with Zlatko, sort of educated me on this. And I thought, well, I can't lose Zlatko or Lucy. I don't know what to do. And then Brandy came along and those shoes were appropriately filled. So I'm sure somebody's going to come along and step into Brandy's shoes. And that's the way this budget services works. And that's the strength of this organization. Filling them might be a different question, at least as full as she's brought them to us. So, you've done a fantastic job, Brandy. You really have. When's your last date?
June 2nd.
Okay, June 2nd. So many of you that sit on other committees know how many times the work that as chairs and co-chairs we do with budget services and with staff, and from Zlatko and John on down, they are always so good about, and many times as Zlatko has turned to me and said, Judge, you got to figure this out. We'll help you, but you guys are the ones that come forward with motions like we do today. But that being said, they help us make those decisions. And Brandy has done an exemplary job of that. And I just want to thank her, wish her the best of luck. I see Judge Kelly's hand up, and I think Judge Fannin, if anybody else wants to make any additional comments.
Oh no, I was just sending a message to everybody how sad it was to hear this news and how much she will be missed.
Yep, same.
For those of you that remember Lucy, by the way, I think Lucy's like onto much greener pastures, and I hope Brandy will, not that this isn't a green pasture, Brandy, but I hope wherever you are moving is something that they're going to benefit from having you with them. So,
thank you.
Yep. Anything anybody else wants to add? Okay, the JBBC, I'm just reminded by Judge Rubin, the JBBC meeting is June 6th. We'll be taking this to them. our next meeting is July 7th. I think that's right.
Sorry.
July 6th.
Still with you guys, July 6th.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Rebecca, best wish. Rebecca's been sending me texts. There's something wrong with her connection. And she's been very supportive of the discussion. She was really appreciative of the comments made, but she just can't
Sorry,
get in.
Sorry, everybody.
There she is.
Just that light today. I don't know what it is.
All right. Well, thank you all. The comments made today were exceptionally appropriate and thoughtful and wise. And thank you all. Stay whatever healthy, and I can't close the meeting without saying go Dodgers. All right, you guys, thanks all. Best of luck. Bye bye.
Thanks, Brandy. Congratulations.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Bye.